Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is the Batter Up Podcast, episode number 4, I believe it is. We're all the way up to here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the radio.com app, a radio.com exclusive. My name is Will Pelagic, a.k.a. Willie P. You can find me on Twitter at Willie P. Style, along with Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson. You can find Joe on Twitter at JAPatrick200 and Caleb at ATLJohnson18. We encourage you to send us questions that we might be able to answer for you on the editions of the podcast. First, I introduce my podcast friends. Hello, Joe Patrick.
Hello, Willie P. How's it going, man?
I'm well, sir. And hello, Mr. Johnson.
What's going on?
So, from when we last talked, again, we really haven't had a lot happen, although it's starting to really kind of have a lot of optimism around the actual return to some normalcy. I know that the sports world as a whole got a real jolt of energy with the NFL draft over the weekend. NBA is going to open some facilities by the end of this week, and the NHL is looking for a particular plan. There is nothing yet from the standpoint of baseball, but as we start, Joe, I think we're probably in the most optimistic realm right now when it comes to actually having a season and having an ability to have baseball come back in some way, shape, or form by the time we hit the summer.
Yeah, it's like you can start to kind of feel the winds blowing, right? It's like, and it's not necessarily specific to Major League Baseball, like you said, but you're starting to see all these leagues around the country and around the world starting to kind of revamp back up. I'm obviously a big soccer head, and the head of Italian soccer, those teams will begin training in the middle of this month as well, alongside MLS hopes to be training by the middle of May. Same with NWSL. Apparently, women's soccer players have been told that to expect to be training by the middle of the month. So, optimistic signs. I think there are some things that baseball will still need to work through, and obviously, we're going to tackle some of those issues like we tend to do on this podcast, at least what it's been so far. But I'm hopeful. I don't know about you guys, but I'm hopeful that like we're going to get something.
Caleb, it seems to me that, you know, you and I were kind of on the more pessimistic side of this whole thing, and not just because I don't want to see baseball, but, you know, I'm curious to see how this works. I'm curious to see what the model looks like. When do they let fans in? How encouraged by you by some of the are you actually by some of the chatter that we've gotten?
I mean, I think you have to be encouraged to some extent, just because, like we had been talking for the longest time, we were having conversations of, well, hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll have a better idea. Hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll have a better idea. And now that we're starting to see things pick back up in different areas, and just as far as I know, people have reservations about, you know, states opening things back up. But just seeing that is kind of this, like, testing area of, okay, we'll see how this goes. And also just the fact of I've listened to, like, Dr. Fauci was on with the Yes Network talking about, you know, his basic assumptions of when things could get back going. And they're starting to build plans, some of the plans that we've kind of gone through. But they're building plans. They're knocking down the ones that, you know, have too many Swiss cheese holes in them, and building something that can maybe be more realistic here, hopefully maybe the start of June.
Yeah, I actually heard Mark Cuban was on CNBC earlier today, and he was saying that, you know, he expressed some optimism as well. He was saying, like, you know, we want to get this thing revved up as quickly as we can. Obviously, safety comes first, and that will kind of take precedence over any kind of activity that starts. But, you know, hearing him, I've actually listened to a few interviews he's done over the last month or so while we've been through all this, because he's kind of entering the political arena. And, you know, obviously he's a business person, just has interesting insight, I think, on this situation. And he's always been a little bit more, to me, sounding like he's been a little bit more on the pessimistic side in terms of we need to make sure we have our ducks in a row. But he did sound to me a little bit more optimistic than what I've heard so far. And he did say, you know, don't get it twisted, like, this is going to be a made for TV. Sports will be made for TV. You know, there are not going to be fans. But I think that by now we've kind of all crossed that bridge, right? And we understand mm-hmm. what to expect when sports do come back. So I think that, you know, again, like you said, Caleb, there are some things that we still need to kind of wait and see how some things pan out. But it is good to see the wheels just seem to be in motion a little bit.
Yeah, and the one thing I think that's interesting, guys, is that, you know, even in some of the places that are the most hard hit, like New York, for example, you know, Andrew Cuomo came out this weekend and said that he could envision seeing baseball being played in New York City in the summer. Whether that's with fans or not, I think that remains to be seen. But I think if there's anything that I want to see happen, it's that I don't know if the Biodome thing is, number one, best for baseball, and number two, best for the fans, because once you get in that scenario, it's very, very hard to extract yourself from it. And I think any plan that comes forth, I think, has to begin with it being safe to play baseball inside their home stadiums, because what makes one home stadium better than another? I know that trying to control the variables is what we want to try and do as much as we possibly can. And like we always say, none of us are epidemiologists, so I do not pretend to have an understanding about, you know, the virus and the inner workings of how it spreads and things of that nature. But I think you have to be able to ease the concerns of players, because, and ease the concerns of fans too, because I believe that the only way to feasibly actually start the season is get them in a way where you have an opportunity to play baseball inside their home ballparks with the intention of eventually allowing fans to come in contact.
Yeah, and we've talked about the testing, you know. Let me step back for a second. When we talk about this, the whole Biodome situation that has been proposed by Major League Baseball, or rumored to have been proposed by them, that is about protecting the players and the people that would be involved with putting on a game, you know, so making sure that players are not infected, coaches, any personnel that would be involved with the broadcast, that kind of thing. And I do think it is interesting. I agree with you, Will, that I don't think that you necessarily need to be quarantined within a certain stadium or a certain physical place, like a hotel or whatever it is. But I do think that you need to have the tests available to make sure continuously, like, you're taking a test every day, probably, to, you know, every player every day or every few days, to make sure that you're just not introducing any sort of contamination into it. And I do think that it is more feasible for baseball to proceed with the players and the personnel that would be required already in place at their various stadiums. I think there is a way to do it safely, and I just think that you can pull that off without having to jump through all the hoops that would be necessary to do what's been proposed already.
One actual piece of baseball news that we got since we last spoke, gentlemen, is the punishment handed down to the Boston Red Sox for their role in the systemic cheating scandal that mainly implicated the Houston Astros, but because Alex Cora went from Houston to Boston, there was some possible carryover, or at least assumed carryover. And really, the issue kind of boils down to the fact that they kind of pinned this all on the one guy, the video coordinator JT Watkins. And outside of that, you know, Boston kind of gets off somewhat scot-free. Number one, how much of this do you believe when it comes to a narrative standpoint? And number two, how does Rob Manfred not come out of this just looking completely poor and weak-willed as a commissioner? Because I can't seem to envision a way that this doesn't serve as a black eye on his legacy.
Are we honestly surprised by any of this? At least I wasn't. When you hear the name JT Watkins, I want to take you to one other person's name. The name is Basil Ellaby. If that name does not if that name does not ring a bell to you, this is the homeless man that was charged with the fires of the I-85 bridge back in, I believe it was 2018. Basil mm-hmm. Ellaby was a homeless man who was apparently doing some drugs underneath the bridge, started a fire in his cart, which then caught some other materials on fire, and then the whole bridge burned and collapsed and caused a lot of issues for a lot of people in Atlanta. Now, here's the reason why I bring up Basil's name, is for the pure fact of, are we really just pinning it on a scapegoat? Did we just find a homeless guy and we were like, yeah, let's put it on him because now we have a face for this thing. We can blame someone. It really won't get anyone in trouble, even though, hey, why were these materials underneath the bridge? You know, all these other questions that we need to be asking about, you know, the politics kind of going on around this scenario. But we received a face to blame, and you know, there was someone to punish. When it comes to JT Watkins, that's what his name is going to go down as. He is the guy who, when you start reading about him, you know, he was like a minor league player in their system. He essentially just happened to work his way up into this position. You know, he's finally able to have a job that is sustainable, and he's in the major leagues as close as he'll ever get. And did he come to the rest of the Red Sox and be like, hey guys, let's try this out? No, he's a nobody. No one's going to listen to him. No,
yeah, go ahead.
It was just the fact, like, yes, this clearly carried over from Houston, and the fact that we're pinning it on this 30-year-old replay operator is just, man, it couldn't get more,
He's the Chris Carter fall guy, is what he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have a fall guy.
He was a cog in the machine, you know, and he was the one that was chosen. It was funny when I read when the report came out. I don't know why, but the image that stuck in my head immediately after reading it was, I'm sure, have you guys seen The Waterboy?
Yes.
Yes.
You're the devil, JT Watkins.
JT Watkins is the devil.
Well, it's the perfect. It's got a nice ring to it, you know.
It really does. Yeah.
You gotta say it like Watkins.
But I think, you know, I think Manfred, this whole situation has already been a black eye for him. And to me, I don't even know if it really affects it that much. I just think the cheating scandal is never going to make any kind of baseball commissioner look good who's overseeing it. You know, Bud Selig, obviously, when the steroid scandal was happening, you know, there were questions about him during that time. And I think that it's always going to be a difficult situation for Manfred, but he clearly has not handled it well at all. And I think that it almost felt like, to me, with all of this, you know, all this debate and discussion and new meetings that Manfred has with the coronavirus going on, it just feels like this was an opportune time to kind of sweep it under the rug, name a scapegoat, and kind of move past it. And I just think that that's going to leave a lot of fans feeling kind of chapped.
But here's the difference between the steroid scandal and the baseball cheating scandal is that the baseball cheating scandal, to this point that we know of, only benefited two teams. There were many more beneficiaries when it comes to the steroid era, including baseball itself. Baseball itself got a lot of goodwill back into the fans' eyes.
Sure.
Not necessarily just based on anything that happened as far as, you know, finding out about the steroids, but the actual benefits, you know, like the summer of 98 that we got the Maguire-Sosa home run chase. That brought a lot of fans back to baseball. And this is a situation where it's like, this doesn't benefit anybody other than two teams, and one of them won a World Series.
honestly, everything the commissioner has done recently, in my personal opinion, has driven fans away.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. I think it's one of those, you know, what the commissioner is trying to do with this ruling is make it go away. I finally, you know, we dished out our punishment. Now this thing can finally go away. And the only problem is because he went soft on this and we really didn't get a great explanation for why some people received longer suspensions and, you know, who we decided to pin things on, it's going to stick around versus if you look at the NBA and what Adam Silver did, he stepped right into the commissioner's role and had to deal with Donald Sterling and right. He dropped the hammer and everyone immediately was shocked. But then as you went on, you were okay, that's where, you know, he's going to stand for something. And I guess that's my biggest issue with Major League Baseball and Commissioner Rob Manfred right now is I don't know what he stands for because yeah. He's so wishy-washy on multiple issues.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, just to kind of piggyback on that, I remember when he gave a press conference at the Braves' new spring training facility about the Astros, and that yeah. was just like the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, he looked so uncomfortable. He clearly didn't have good answers for the questions that were being asked by the press, and I feel like he still doesn't, but at least now he's like, it's almost like a benefit to him that he has this coronavirus scandal that's like,
oh absolutely,
not coronavirus scandal, but you know, this whole coronavirus situation where it's like, oh, this is the perfect time to kind of do a little news dump on the Red Sox, and you know, let's focus on the thing that everybody is kind of focused on right now.
I'm surprised that we haven't seen more ticked off players, quite honestly. Like, I understand that the players are probably more tight-knit now than they were, say, when all three of us were growing up, that there's not the adversarial nature of sports that there used to be. And that's always one of the greatest old man arguments, like, I remember back when people used to hate each other on the other side of the floor, those kind of things. I'm not trying to make one of those type of old man yells at cloud statements, but I'm surprised we haven't seen more people kind of like Trevor Bauer come out and say, yeah, this is stupid. Throw the book at these guys.
Well, I will say, you know, I think that they're being protected a little bit by the fact that they don't have media asking them questions.
Exactly.
Every day. You know, they don't have they're not in a clubhouse with reporters coming in and asking them how they feel about it. So there's like that little bit of burden. There's that kind of separation where they would have to intentionally go onto Twitter or so, they would have to go create their own broadcast of their opinions as to where, you know, after the Astros thing. It was honestly kind of hilarious to me to just like watch all the baseball, all the players, Cody Bellinger, all these guys just ripping on him. Yeah. And rightfully so, you know, I think that there is legitimate gripes to be had, obviously, but it's just like they don't want, there's not there's not an easy way for them to broadcast their feelings about it.
Do you think the coronavirus insulates the Astros and Red Sox from any kind of country justice, if you will, that players might take into their own hands once we actually resume play? Or do you think that there will be some brand of retaliation taken by some pitchers?
I believe it's situational. Will most teams kind of put it behind them and move on to some extent? Yeah, probably. Are the teams in the Astros division probably going to keep it at the forefront of their mind? And someone's going to do something, I believe. You know, whoever is the first team to play the Astros might be the one, or it might end up, you know, being the Yankees, who were obviously affected by, you know, the big cheating scandal. I don't know. I believe it'll be someone will do something. But will it be as much as what was going on during spring training? Probably not, because at that point, everyone's attention will be just so focused on the fact that we can play baseball games that yeah. we're not going to give it the time of day that we would have had we been yeah. playing 2 months ago.
That's the thing, is I think this whole coronavirus situation has created this environment where when baseball comes back, it's going to have that kind of feel that baseball had when it came back from after 9/11 happened, you know, and it was like this very American, you know, we're reclaiming our pastime kind of feeling. And I think that that's going to kind of overshadow a lot of these kind of the way that people feel about, especially players feel about this this cheating scandal. But it would be hilarious if, like, that was, it was like this big, like, you know, American flag thing. You know, they had this big ceremony about baseball finally returning, and then the first Astros guy that comes up to the plate gets thrown out. Like, that would be hilarious to me.
Be a lot of pageantry involved there. One thing I just want to bring up real quick, just because it came across while we're recording here, according to Hawks GM Travis Schlenk, he said this to Sarah Spencer of The Athletic, the Hawks have received no official word from the league that practice facilities will be allowed to reopen Friday. Even if they had, they would not do so because they want to be cautious and see how the loosened restrictions go. So for those, again, thinking that, you know, maybe the NBA might be going out and being allowed to reopen their facilities, maybe more caution is needed because, you know, even though some things here in Georgia are reopened, it's not as if the leagues themselves have taken that step to try and at least do something in terms of moving towards playing. So I don't know how that rubs you guys.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is this specifically regards to, like, any players entering the facility at all? Because I think that there was a report. Obviously, this, if it's coming from Schlenk today, that would be more recent and a better report. But what I had heard was that players would be able to come to the facility to get individual treatment or individual workouts with, like, individual supervision, that there still wouldn't be team exercises going on, but at least the facility would be open for access to the players on the team.
That they won't have their facilities open Friday.
Okay.
They got no word from them. So, go ahead, Caleb.
I think the thing is, especially specifically when it comes to Major League Baseball, I believe they're going to be the first to try to come out, as far as American sports. They're going to be the first ones to try to come out and play and get something going, only because they have the backing of, hey, let's go look at what's going on in Taiwan. They're playing over there. They're making it work. How can we mimic sort of what they're doing and get some games going? You know, spring training, miniature spring training started.
Have you guys watched any of those Taiwanese league games at all?
I have not, only for the pure fact of I am the kind of person when it comes to sports, I have to be invested into storylines. I have to be invested into players, and I don't get that from, you know, I don't know anyone over there, and so it's hard for me to get invested and to truly care about the game in the same way versus if I'm in a random city that I know has a minor league baseball team and I don't know anybody, but I'll go pop in because it's something new. I don't get that in the same way being televised, that I need the storylines and the names to really be interested.
I've popped on it a little bit every so often. I wouldn't say that I was watching it intently. I saw a brawl in one of those games.
Really?
They had a benches clearing brawl, which, again,
that's amazing.
It's not when you think about the Asian game, they don't usually do that. Have any of you guys seen the movie Mr. Baseball?
It's been a long time
ago. Yeah.
So, like, remember in that movie where the opposing pitcher tipped his hat to say that he didn't throw it at the Tom Selleck character on purpose? That's a real thing. That's a real thing. That's not fake. So, like, there was an actual, like, benches clearing brouhaha brawl in one of these games. And so I'm like, you know what? Baseball's back. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've just been, like, more interested in watching it for just to see how they're doing it, you know, to see kind of what measures they're taking, that kind of thing.
Go ahead, Caleb.
I don't know that they're doing anything, like, I guess some of the things that we've discussed, like, they're not doing anything outrageously surprising. They're just kind of, I feel like a lot of conversations that I've heard, and this comes within states opening back up and various things of that nature, is there is a lot of people who are just like, yeah, well, let's see what happens. And unfortunately, I think that's how we're going to go about doing a lot of this.
Ready, fire, aim.
It's just kind of like, let's, what happens? And then once we get some of the ramifications.
That's what we're doing in Georgia.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's, I see that kind of trickling down into sports leagues, which is kind of like, let's see what happens.
And you know it's going to come with a lot of criticism on the side of it. Like the first league that opens up first is going to get hit hard with criticism. We've talked about that part before. One thing that that the pandemic has brought is not just classic games, but classic baseball movies. Have you seen some of the universal slander that has come about for the movie Bull Durham? Like why are people slamming Bull Durham and saying that it's – somebody said, I find that movie so cringy. Like, you know, this cougar lady who's going out and trying to sleep with young players. Like, that's very cringy. I'm like, it's kind of accurate. It's kind of accurate. I've seen it.
Have you
I've
been around Bradley?
I've seen it.
I'm not releasing any names
or anything like that or anything that you guys don't know, but like that happens.
I mean, it's still classic sports rom-com plot line, you know, it's like the classic one. I just saw the other day I had on, I think it was MLB Network. I just kind of like had it on mute and there was a movie called Trouble with the Curve on.
Oh yeah.
Which, yeah.
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. Adams. I kind of was just like half paying attention and I would like glance over and see like Justin Timberlake and Amy Adams having a fling or whatever. But at the end it was cool because it was at Turner Field, like a Braves prospect. Mm-hmm. It was like their pitcher going against a Braves prospect or whatever, which by the way, it was so hilarious to me. And here's an issue I have with sports movies, like hire consultants and get like some player who used to play minor league baseball or something to come in. Oh yeah, there was a guy who was supposed to be a Braves prospect, like their top prospect, who was taking cuts, and he's like a fat guy and he's just like turning the bat around his body like someone who plays beer league softball would be. It's like, come on.
Those are always the best when it comes to movies. That is one aspect where I think just because you grow up playing sports as fun, that people, actors especially, think they have some of that skill that, I know how to throw a ball or I know how to XYZ or whatever. Going kind of off that note, it just being at the house a lot, you kind of come to terms with, I'll watch what I want to watch for a little bit. The wife will watch what she wants to watch for a little bit. So I've grown to have an appreciation for, she's watching One Tree Hill. And in there.
Hey now.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Don't knock that show. That's a great boyfriend girlfriend show.
That's a great boyfriend girlfriend show. I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought I was. But one specific thing was just when it comes to the protagonist of the story. Our antagonist of the story is a shooting guard, and he gets moved to small forward because the protagonist comes in and he becomes the starting shooting guard, and they're having this conflict over like, my life is over because I had to change positions. And I was like, wait, he's still a starter. But that happens so often in sports movies that we just totally gloss over, or TV shows too, that we totally gloss over these kinds of things. I think when it comes to Bull Durham that you were talking about, Will, that one just, to me, hasn't aged well because of Kevin Costner. I'm not the biggest fan of Kevin Costner in baseball movies.
He's got a couple of them.
Yeah, I know.
He's got a couple of them.
He does. Yeah, I was going to say, well, you're...
And I guess I don't find...
That's kind of his range.
But I guess that's what I don't like, because I want more of the comedies. I want more of the Major League and things like that than I do a real serious, more rom than com. And I get kind of bored.
He's been baseball architect, baseball field architect. He's been pitcher, and he's been
yeah,
catcher.
See, I think we
and,
over...
And he's also got all his picks back in the NFL draft after trading
also.
He's
also run the most dysfunctional organization in pro football in a fantasy movie.
He wrote the pick down weeks before he even had to make it. But yeah, like Field of Dreams, I think that was a little overhyped, and we really...
Oh, shut up. Shut up.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's the
your dirty mouth.
It's the film critic in me that I just I don't know.
I have been to the Field of Dreams in Dyersburg.
Yeah, people love it in Major League Baseball, you know, playing the games there. They really take it seriously.
Do you guys have a favorite baseball movie?
Oh, it's got to be Major League. Major League's got to be the favorite. I think that's the most technically sound baseball movie.
I'm torn between...
Don't say Summer Catch.
No.
There are so many good ones. There are lots of good ones to choose from.
Well, you threw that one out, and now I blanked. It's between Major League and Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill.
Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Moneyball, yeah.
I like The Natural. Man. I like For Love of the Game also.
How about like our favorite crappy ones? Mine is Angels in the Outfield.
Mr. Baseball.
Angels in the Outfield was one I grew up with. I was actually originally born, not that I was ever an Angels fan, but I was kind of like, that was the first baseball game I ever went to was an Angels game.
It can happen.
I think that movie came out when I was like right towards the end of me living there. But anyway, great movie. And the cast is incredible.
I was about to say,
Christopher Lloyd.
You guys.
Matthew McConaughey.
You're forgetting Disney classic, The Rookie, with Dennis Quaid.
He was good.
I hated that movie.
You
actually,
did?
It's a real
what?
Story.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie
of the Year.
That is a fantastic baseball movie. Oh, no. The one that is the really bad one that I love the most is Little Big League. Little Big League favorite. That's the one where the kid inherits the Minnesota Twins and then becomes the manager. He's like this baseball nerd.
I feel like Little Big League and Rookie of the Year were like rival baseball movies because they were both kind of in the same time frame. They were both about kids in Major League Baseball and stuff. And I always skewed toward the Rookie of the Year side. I loved how the manager always called him a different name every time he refers to him.
Gartenhoser!
Gartenhoser.
somehow this one is escaping me.
Rookie of the Year?
Not Rookie of the Year. I'm talking about the one that Will was just talking about.
Little Big League?
Yeah, Little Big League.
You have to see this movie.
Worth a watch.
Yeah. I mean, and
it has a lot of cameos in it, too, of real baseball. Like, Ken Griffey's in it, Randy Johnson's in it.
Oh. Huh. Just a little bit before my time, I guess.
Ugh. Now, what is your guilty pleasure, not just sports, but, like, what's your guilty pleasure show? Like, the show that you'd be embarrassed to admit that you actually like? Because, Caleb, you mentioned one of mine.
Okay. Honestly, YOLO, I don't care. Back when my sister was in high school, she had her wisdom teeth taken out, and so she had the entire collection to the Gilmore Girls and constantly went through them. And so I was stuck watching them with her, and she would fall asleep and then have to rewind the episode. And so I ended up watching the show a lot, so much so that I'm a big Gilmore Girls fan, and I don't care. You know, it's whatever.
All right, Patrick, go right ahead.
Well, in college, we had a drinking game to The O.C.,
so
I probably have to say The O.C.
Nice.
Terrible show, but also amazing at the same time. But now I will say one that I'm not afraid to admit, and I would actually encourage every person to go out and watch this. If you have Amazon Prime Video, you can go out and watch a bunch of seasons. Survivor, great freaking show.
No.
I never watched it when I was a kid. You saying that, I bet you don't watch it.
You can't see the face if you're listening to us on the radio.com app, but my face just cringed.
Yeah, I don't do reality shows. I just can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Bachelor series.
It's your loss.
I'm not afraid.
Survivor is an amazing show.
I'm not afraid to admit the Bachelor series. I love the Bachelor series.
I can do Big Brother, but that's about as far into reality TV that I can stand.
I've never watched Big Brother. I don't really watch any reality TV, so maybe that's one
other
of the reasons why.
Other than
I
the worst reality TV show that there is,
it is not the one that went on
for so long.
See, everybody who says it's terrible does not watch it, and that's just the evidence is right there in front of me. It's like
fair enough.
You got to give it a shot.
I've got Caleb. Time. I have time.
Caleb mentioned one of mine, One Tree Hill. I watched that. Basically, One Tree Hill and Gossip Girl, both I watched because there was an ex-girlfriend of mine who loved both those shows. And the one thing that I realized about those shows that are on like the CW and WB, they all have insanely beautiful women to look at. And that's just
that's true.
I mean
that's fair enough.
That's how you get that's the hook. That's how they get the guy to watch with the girl, because they usually put 15s on the show.
Who was the actress that kind of became like a model that was in Seventh Heaven? She was like the eldest daughter, I think.
Jessica Biel?
Jessica Biel. Yeah. She's kind of past it now. Now she's no one really knows.
I was about
who
to say
she is.
she's married to Justin Timberlake, so doing pretty well.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Well, I take it back. I guess she's just removed herself from the spotlight. I haven't heard her name in years.
She was in a really good short series show called The Sinner. It was pretty interesting on I want to say like USA Network or something like that.
Speaking of sports movies, a man who made a cameo in one of those Kevin Costner sports movies that Caleb hates, Vin Scully, is home safe, thank goodness, after suffering a fall at his home in Los Angeles. That would have been, if the coronavirus claimed Vin Scully, I would have been beside myself.
Well, thank goodness he doesn't live in New York, like, right? That he could actually, like, go to a hospital that would, like, go, like, get treatment that was safe.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's his name and it's Betty White's name that every time I see it trending on Twitter, I just have that moment of, like, please, no. Yeah. And then I saw it and I was like, okay, he's okay, we're good. You know, just, hey, sometimes it happens with seniors. They fall, they hurt themselves, but yeah, thankfully he's okay, because he is definitely a national treasure.
The best with him, other than the Sandy Koufax no-hitter call, or the perfect game call, I should say, which if you haven't heard that, the final inning of Sandy Koufax's perfect game in 1965, you have to go YouTube that, because that is a virtuoso type performance. Not only that, but also the Kirk Gibson at bat. We always love to talk about that one. But the greatest obscure Vin Scully stuff is always when he's lip reading a manager trying to talk to an umpire, and he'll, instead of saying the bad word, he'll say, "That's fertilizer. That is blanking fertilizer."
Well, it's also just the fact that it constantly makes me jealous that voices like Vin Scully, Don Sutton would be another one that I would kind of throw in that mix of, like, they just don't make voices like that anymore. What's his name up in Minnesota that I'm blanking on?
John Gordon.
No, that's not who I'm thinking of. That was in Major League Baseball. I mean, it was in Major League.
Milwaukee. You're thinking of Bob Uecker. Oh,
Milwaukee, yeah, yes, yeah. Thank you.
Just a bit outside.
Yeah, but like
tried the corner and missed.
Yeah, they just don't make voices like that.
He was also just a naturally hilarious, was and is still a naturally hilarious
that's
person.
Definitely true.
You do realize he doesn't call games like that necessarily on, like, if you actually listen to a Brewers game, he's not that exaggerated as he was in Major League.
But he has that voice and that inflection that just works really well with the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Vaughn gets the starting call today. We heard he matured a lot over the winter. Apparently, he's bathing now.
We really went down a rabbit hole today.
We did.
It's fine.
I enjoyed it.
This was definitely.
That's what this is supposed to be. I have 9 topics here. We hit 2 of them. I mean, like, I don't care.
That is not a passing grade.
You can't bat 1,000.
I was say 2 out of 9. That's what? What is that math majors? That's almost a fourth.
I was about to say that's a
it's acceptable in the launch angle era.
Yeah. As long as I'm hitting some home runs. I think we hit some home runs today. I would say.
We're a bench roll podcast. Is that where we're at, batting 2 for now?
We are above replacement level. We are a win above replacement is what we are. We have a positive WAR is what you.
That's
say.
Good to know.
Hey, we should mention that it's going to be World Series week on Fox Sports South this week, so we can watch all of the 95 World Series. One game a night going through Saturday. It's perfect.
I live tweeted right at the beginning of the pandemic. I live tweeted watching the clincher. And you go back and you see all those things, including, you know, how David Justice ripped the fans in the paper, and then he goes and gets the home run. And I think that performance from Tom Glavine is one of the more, I think, nationally forgotten pitching performances in a clincher because he, you know, basically a one-hit shutout. I've just, from that perspective, I look at that performance, I'm thinking, show me a better one other than one Braves fans would love to forget, and Jack Morris or a better performance in a clinching game. It's hard to find one.
I would also just like to point out the fact that I'm very thankful that I was not one of those people who, when the pandemic started, rushed out to go watch all these old games, because thankfully we're kind of spacing these things out, and I didn't go rush to watch all of the World Series games from that 95 World Series. And so now this week, I'm going to just slowly enjoy them day by day on Fox Sports South.
Same here. It'll be time for a nice, it'll be 7 o'clock. It'll be time for a drink and, you know, settle in and watch a baseball game. I did watch game one of the World Series, which will air tonight, which is Monday night. Because they showed that when they did the Greg Maddux birthday party where they showed all some of his greatest games. But I'm so looking forward to this.
That's also one of the last World Series, guys, that had the split network because they had the baseball network stuff and they split it with ABC.
That's right.
ABC for the, I think, odd game or even games, and then NBC for the even games or vice versa, one of the two. I think ABC would have had ABC had 1, 4, and 5. ABC had 2, 3, and 6. And I think ABC would have had game 7 if they would have gotten that far. So ABC kind of got somewhat jobbed there at the end because the Braves ended up clinching it in 6.
And was that Al Michaels for them on ABC?
Al Michaels, Jim Palmer, and Tim McCarver. In my view...
That's watching the Jordan, what are they calling it? The Last Dance. Watching that and you realize how many legendary calls or just how many classic calls that that Brett had back in the day. He was everywhere.
They had Skip Carey on one of those early playoffs.
Yeah,
they did. Yeah.
It's
Michael
so strange.
Jordan, you know.
It's like, sir, wrong sport. You know, what's going on?
This number 23 can really shoot it. If he hits one there, we can dance in the streets. Oh, that's the wrong year. I'm sorry. That's not 95. That's 92. They might have to hospitalize Sid Bream. That was always my favorite when it came to Skip Carey.
My favorite thing about Skip Carey was, like, on a foul ball, it'd be like, a fan from Dahlonega comes down with that one. You know, just, like, randomly making up places.
Well, because Chip will try to do that now. And It's funny where you realize, oh, okay, getting that from Dad, I get it.
Can I mention one other thing? There was one other Skip Carey moment, a very specific one that sticks out in my mind forever because I was in the car with my dad and we both just cracked up laughing. He was in the booth with, I forget who the co-commentator was, probably Don Sutton,
or,
I think.
Or Pete, maybe?
I don't think it was Pete Van Weir. Anyway, it was someone who was like, it's like, man, Skip, I gotta give kudos to the stadium concessions, or whatever. I was like, I just had a great bowl of black bean soup, and then there was like this long silence over the air, and then Skip just goes, "Let's get this game over in a hurry."
Just not here for the small talk.
There's one. I feel like I have to bring this one up now. The Cardinals were playing a game in New York against the Mets, and this is when I was working in Missouri, and it was Mike Shannon who was on the call, and Mike goes, I tell you what, guys, they got this big full moon over left field here at Shea Stadium. I wish you guys back home in Missouri could see this moon.
I wish I could remember things like this.
I wish, like, you guys could see this big moon. It's this big moon. I wish you guys could see that back home in St. Louis. We can, Mike.
I love it.
I've never been one of those people who can just recall things like that. I don't know. I've noticed it more recently with our station running CBS Network a lot, that the number of people in Philadelphia and New York who will call in, it'll be Mike Francesa on, and it'll be like, do you remember 1977? It was August 25th. It's just like,
Greg Nettles was hitting third.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Joe Morgan was at the plate, and you know, just and going through. And do you know who was the pitcher who had a scoreless inning?
It was Ron. It was Ron Guidry.
Yeah. And it's one of those that you're just like, how do you remember this? And also, why is now the time to bring it up? But people have those not photographic memories, but just being able to recall things like that.
It's like they have images.
It was Ron Guidry. It was 1979.
It worries me sometimes because I'm like, look, is it because like I'm a part of the younger generation who we don't have to remember phone numbers and anything like that because it's all stored in our phones that
that's right.
I'm not retaining information.
Exercise your mind, Caleb.
Yeah,
exercise your mind.
Yes,
look,
that is the reason why
I start to worry sometimes, and I'm like, man, you know, I'm a little concerned because I don't remember things like this.
I'm gonna utter a dirty word if we don't do this if we don't end this podcast here.
Oh yeah,
but I had fun, guys. I hope you guys did as well, and hope you listening at home did as well. Hopefully, we have again more clear answers as to when we'll get baseball back by the next time that we joined you a week from now. But until then, please be sure to subscribe to the Batter Up Podcast. We are found on the radio.com app and wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Willie P Style, Joe Patrick at JA Patrick 200, and Caleb Johnson at ATL Johnson 18. For all of us here from 92.9 The Game, radio.com, and Batter Up, we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.